Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Castlevania Aria of Sorrow, a Metroidvania game developed and published by Konami for the Game Boy Advance in 2003.
Yeah. One that's been on our list for a while.
I mean, every Castlevania, especially of this ilk, is on our list a little.
They're all treats. Mm-hmm. They're treats that I only want to have every once in a while.
Yeah.
But they are treats.
Yes.
You know, they're carnival food.
Yes.
I think this kind of Igavania. Mm-hmm. In this one, you play as Soma Cruz, who is an exchange student in Japan who ends up trapped in Dracula's castle during an eclipse in the year 2035.
Mm. And Soma, upon being trapped in the castle, quickly learns that he has these latent dark powers that have awakened, and he seeks to find a way for him and his girlfriend, Mina, to escape.
Yes. This is an Igavania, as we mentioned. If you don't know what that is, these are the branch of Castlevania games that followed after Symphony of the Night that play very similarly.
Yes.
This game specifically is like a greatest hits, like Reader's Digest version of Symphony of the Night.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting when you talk about how it plays the same, because you are literally fighting a lot of the same enemies and going to the same areas.
Mm-hmm.
of this, which is always Castlevania's trick, but it felt very naked in this one.
Yes.
It feels like, what if a 6-hour Symphony of the Night?
Right. And for me, back in the day, for a while, I said that the Game Boy Advance was my favorite system, and Ooh. This was my favorite game. It was so cool to play this thing on the go like that. Understand, I had not played Symphony of the Night to that point.
Yes.
So like to have this, I think it was really expensive at the time too. So to have this opportunity to play something like it, and to have one of those gee whiz, like, wow, I have the power of the PlayStation asterisk in the palm of my hand was yes. a thing. Yeah.
Oh yeah. If the, this game, like I like this game a lot. Mm-hmm. When I first played it, I loved it. It was a little bit harder to go back to in some ways, like that, you know, that we're going to talk about. All of that gets erased by the handheld console curve
mm-hmm.
of this. The idea of in 2003 having this experience, you know, on the go, by which, as always, I mean in my bed, on the couch, mm-hmm. is just incredible.
Yeah.
You know, it is very robust, and that is a thing that will the shine will come off that, I think, with new generations, like largely because of the Switch and the Steam Deck.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. There are people listening to this who probably are young enough that the idea of this kind of experience portable isn't that impressive.
Yeah.
You know, but it really was.
Mm-hmm.
Sincerely.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a weird thing because as a Symphony of the Night fan, there weren't more Symphonies of the Night on console.
No.
We had to go here. Mm-hmm. For them, it was a really interesting time.
Yeah,
for this stuff, like historically as an artifact, this whole lineage is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just like for basically all of the 90s, portable game systems were chasing like, hey, this is, you know, it's just like the console, just like the way consoles were chasing, hey, it's just like the arcade, right?
Yes.
And having been through a bunch of those and finally gotten to one that really did feel like it was at parity. And we can talk about the ways that it kind of comes up short. And yes, it is a little bit hard to go back to. That felt like a very important moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard to understate, and not this, but this is the third in the series.
Yes.
It's hard to understate this lineage, this mini series and that kind of importance. Now everything is kind of everything.
Yes.
You know, you get any experience wherever you want it,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's, there's a privation that is no longer in play. Yeah.
And we used to have to sit down at certain times to watch certain television shows.
I know. It's all nuts. We had to memorize a code to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
On the phone, we couldn't just click on their face.
Yeah.
We had to memorize like a password
mm-hmm.
to put into our phones. So this is there's a little bit of a departure. The way that these Game Boy Advance and DS Igavania's Castlevania games work is they all have the same basic structure of Symphony of the Night, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about, the Metroidvania structure, but they have a different system overlaying them.
Yes.
This one, you know, so Soma is very similar to Symphony of the Night. These are the commonalities. Can pick up all these different weapons and armor and mm-hmm. such, different equipment that you can find, which is very Symphony of the Night. Mm-hmm. You have the backdash from Symphony of the Night. You have that same move system. But the big mechanical hook for this, the big new thing, is the Tactical Soul system.
Yeah, a very dumb name. It
sounds like a band.
It's a very bad name for a cool system.
Yeah. It sounds like a band I wouldn't mm-hmm. listen to. Tactical Soul system.
Yeah.
I got their LP. So this is the way it works. Like I'm of kind of two minds on this because of a weird grindy farmy half of it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's a cool the core is there,
yes.
which is that every enemy in the game can drop its soul, and every soul corresponds to a different ability you can have.
Right. So it ends up being a little bit like Pokemon, but for magic spells from Castlevania monsters. It is so Pokemon-esque that you could even trade these using the link cable if you wanted to.
Yes, and that there's special bonuses for collecting them all.
Right.
That you can do.
Gotta harve them all.
Yes.
Harvest, I mean. Black gold, Texas. Yeah. It does get a little grindy. So if you are just playing this and, you know, suddenly when you kill something and you get a power and you try it out and it's cool and it fits what you're trying to do, Yahtzee. If you are trying to get a particular monster to drop its soul, which is required for the full ending, you have to find two particular ones. The third one is a guaranteed story drop. When you are going to find these, it does end up like I am refreshing this screen over and over again and killing it and hoping for it to drop. As long as you are not engaging with this in a completionist fashion, it is fun to me.
Yes, same. You know, getting a new thing, trying it out, and deciding if it was better than my old thing was cool and fun.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I think that's probably the intended use case in a lot of ways. It just encourages degeneracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a degenerate play of min-maxing. Like, once this option's on the table, there is a gameotype, and I blame the gameotype. I don't blame the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth talking about that it encourages this kind of thing where, like, I'm going to look up the best one and just grind until I have it.
Yeah.
You know, the sense that the gamer who is driven mad by knowing there is an optimal option that they are not using,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is real. Like, that's a real thing that people feel. I think this is really bad in mm-hmm. terms of that. Like, I wish that there's a way to almost enforce that you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, make every playthrough different. Like, have enemies like stop dropping after. I don't know what it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to brainstorm different ways to do this that wouldn't feel so farm forward,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what it would be.
It just like trying to keep the like fun little accidents, you know, with this while gutting anything that feels like gambling from it, which does feel a little bit like the core of that.
The thing, the closest I came up with was after you leave an area,
mm-hmm.
you'd draft abilities left, which is a totally different thing. That's not a lottery. That's more of a strategy choice, and it would require them being more balanced, because part of the lottery slot machine part of this is that there are certain souls that are just straight up better.
Yeah.
There's no balance between them. And that's a huge task. Like, making the mm-hmm. thing I imagined would take way more work.
Yeah.
As is, it just kind of bums me out that, you know, that collectathon element and having to engage with it at least a little bit to do the true ending
mm-hmm.
is mildly irritating.
Yeah.
It's not a death knell. I just, you know, it feels like bad design. It feels like gachapon degeneracy to me.
That's the downside. The upside is that, like, there's a big amount of variety of things that you can do. Yes. You know, and that is, I think, helped by the fact that you can equip a bunch of these from the different types that are there. Like, you know, my Soma will play differently from your Soma as long as we are not both pursuing one of those optimal kind of strategies, right?
Yeah. In an ideal world, every Soma would be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, even though we'd all be using the Clash or whatever sword that you get from the pirate ship, our soul abilities would be different.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the different kinds of souls that you can get. Bullet souls, which, goddamn, that's an Ajayo tabletop role-playing game if I ever heard one. These are your special attack abilities. Mm-hmm. Guardian souls are the
which
bit
is
like
an RPG
summon.
Maker fan game
yes.
of something.
Guardian souls also. You know, mm-hmm. Are like summons or transformations. Mm-hmm. You turn them on, they drain your magic, and you turn them off.
Yes. Like the first one of these that you get feels like the one you're always going to keep equipped, which is the glide.
Yes.
Some of these kind of edge over into being traversal as well.
Which is interesting because mm-hmm. you want that, but it does end up meaning menu tax for when you have to switch.
Yeah.
But again, for the youngs, the Game Boy Advance had 4 buttons mm-hmm. That it could do. So there weren't a lot of options. Like, one of the things I was thinking about when playing this is wanting a remaster where things like that could be put on a quick bar.
Yes.
Swapping back and forth with the water set that lets you sink in water is not fun.
That's the biggest problem. Yeah. I mean, Order of Ecclesia solved this to a degree. Again, more buttons than that, but like, you have the ability to swap your your tattoos, right? You have
sets.
That you can go back and forth between.
That would be a cool thing for this.
Yeah. The third set are Enchant Souls, which is an obscure GameCube era like card RPG.
Yeah, it might be from FromSoft, but through a crypto publisher or something.
But Enchant Souls, these are your passive abilities or like stat upgrades, right? It's kind of like an extra ring slot in addition to the ring slot that you already have.
Yes, which is a bad ring slot.
Yeah,
it does not give you extra abilities.
No.
And then ability souls are like relics from the previous games. These are new traversal abilities that you do not need to. You can toggle on and off, but why would you? These just kind of slot in, and you gain a new power.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Yeah. This does lean into the action RPG side of this subgenre here, mm-hmm. More so even than the previous two on the Game Boy Advance. Soma's capabilities are determined by experience level and equipment.
Yes. Yeah. Which is driven by exploring. Like the way these are Gestalt games, mm-hmm. like any individual element of it usually doesn't kind of sing. Mm-hmm. It is how they interact.
Right.
You know, which makes them work. Armor and rings affect your stats. Differently means you can kind of shape your build to your situation. A lot of times these things are a little bit negligible. Like +1 luck versus +1 defense, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And there is a linear curve to them. There are just strictly better armor, strictly better rings, things like that.
Yeah.
You have a magic meter. This slowly recovers, and you find hearts, which will recover it faster. Mm-hmm. And you restore health and magic with consumables that you either find or buy.
From a man named Hammer.
From a guy named Hammer, who for some reason gets part of the epilogue. I'm just a guy. Those are the basics of the mechanical stuff. There are things that kind of come out that are like an overlay over the game that are a little bit tricky to specifically place.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a thought during this, an intrusive thought I wanted to run by you.
Okay.
The what if you grabbed a cop's gun?
I was gonna do that one, but it sounded like you were cooking. So
I was just taking a little break on the side to the cook. So one of the things I was thinking about with this specific iteration of a Metroidvania is that the way that the room traversal stuff works, and the way that the level design works, what I ended up feeling like a lot of the time was that I would go and get a key. It wouldn't strictly be a key. It would have traversal benefits as well. Mm-hmm. But the Metroidvania structure in this felt largely like a way of sequencing rooms.
Yeah.
You know, with added backtracking, which is a really reductive, damning way to say it. But again, I don't necessarily think I believe that. It's just something that popped into my head while I was playing it, where I was like, okay, I've got the high jump now. There's maybe one, maybe two treasures I can get now that I mm-hmm. couldn't get before, but mainly I can just go into the next area.
Yeah.
What is the effective difference between just putting those areas in order, and what is why does that feel, I've noticed it more in this game than I do in other games with a Metroidvania structure.
I think we even talked about this in the Symphony of the Night episode, which is, you know, again, talking about upside and downside, the relative anonymity of the spaces, and not anonymity, but even just like what feels like lack of design, which is each room feels a little bit more like a, like, okay, you're going to fight this number of enemies, you know, in a roughly flat plane. Maybe there will be like one or two platforming complications compared to, you know, Castlevania's, let's say 1, 3, and 4. Maybe throw a Bloodlines and Rondo in there if you want to. But like that previous ilk, right, where each screen felt like it was designed down to this really micro level for really tight, you know, geometry, you know, like integrated with the Belmont's movement style kind of deal. Like you do lose like that incredibly good, you know, like space matters kind of feeling when you go to the Symphony of the Night Igavania style. And what you gain is, I mean, like a little bit of a, like a magic trick, right? Which is, it's just the feeling that this is a big place where you can go anywhere, which is not nothing, but it does end up, you know, it can feel empty if they do not, kind of like, keep on pressing that button to give you that sense of wonder, that sense that going back and forth is meaningful. Yeah.
You know, and obscure it a little bit more. Like, there's definitely the split between like the level design focus Castlevania, and what is the, you know, the magic trick Castlevania's, the power fantasy Castlevania's. Like, this is about getting more powerful as you go, and that feeling good.
Yeah, and going back to an earlier area and then just blasting through stuff in one attack that you previously had to be a little bit more careful around.
That's the Igavania trick. And the combat in this is a little bit deeper than some other of its ilk, right? Like there are actually some bosses with tricky patterns, and you have a bigger defensive vocabulary, things like that.
Yeah.
Combat's good. But there's something about the way this does the traversal tricks and the unlocking new areas thing that felt way more direct and linear to me than other entries that we've done. And I think the thing I'm after is, what are the things that make that magic trick more effective?
Yeah.
You know, when I think about Symphony of the Night, which is still my favorite of these, you know, like I love Order of Ecclesia. I love Dawn of Sorrow.
Order of Ecclesia is kind of a different thing, being kind of like totally tap stage based kind of like, deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Hybrid. But like, I'm just in terms of, you know, this era, when I think about that, part of the way that was changed was that like, you had a lot of traversal abilities that you only used for a couple things.
Yeah.
And then there were things to traverse that you could use multiple ways around. Like if you get to a spike hallway, you can use the spike armor or gaseous form or play irritating stick with a bat, you know, and fly through. There was more of that.
Yeah.
The scaled down experience of this, one of the things that they did was really scale that down.
Yeah.
Once you can go underwater, it just opens up an area and maybe one or two health potions you missed somewhere else. I ended up finding that kind of like a patina of mild disappointment that I did not notice when I played it the last time.
You're not alone in that.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. Because I was just feeling a thing. The other thing I thought of, and this isn't a mechanical thing, but I don't know where else to put it. For me, like these are candies and I do want to eat one every couple of years. What does this do that like Death's Gambit doesn't do better? Like what does this, like the 2D Souls like genre does a lot of the same things I think these do more robust and fulfilling way.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, no, like this has its own charms. Like I like the monster designs and stuff, but like the writing in that game is better. The traversal is better. The map's better. The combat's better. Mm-hmm. Like, it, I think that is the throne right now of Metroidvania are 2D Souls likes, and they're so much better at a lot of that part I'm talking about, like
of going being back more thoughtfully and, designed,
much more thoughtfully designed. You know, like going in Grime, getting a new ability, and then finding the places where I could use it was very rewarding. Mm-hmm. They did the trick. You know, this feels a little bit like they stopped caring about the trick and just wanted you to do kind of a treadmill. Which is a bummer, you know, and it doesn't mean I dislike this. It's just like an interesting way that I think that this genre has evolved to leave the people who created the genre kind of far behind.
Yeah.
In this, you know, it like this is like a B game to me is how mm-hmm. I feel. And I think about something like a Grime or a Death's Gambit as like a solid A, like that's a great mm-hmm. game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's interesting. It's just an interesting comparison. And those games aren't often put next to each other, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like just the by virtue of being a classic, you know, I think that that kind of success or, you know, having the name kind of loom large does paper over, you know, certain shortcomings. And somebody out there is banging on their steering wheel and saying like, yeah, you idiots, this came out 20 years ago. This would be like playing yes. the original Super Mario Brothers in 2005.
We'll just replace everything I said with Bloodstained.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is not that appreciably. Like this genre has been very stagnant, this side of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so yes, this came out 20 years ago, but Bloodstained didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's not that different.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody's banging on their steering wheel, retract those bangs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just wanted to throw that out there as well, at least as far as talking about this one in particular. Right. And it's been forever since I played Dawn of Sorrow. I remember really loving Dawn of Sorrow, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if, you know, that upgrade into, you know, the DS and that extra power and storage, et cetera, does make this, you know, does make that a little bit more close to the Symphony of the Night. Yeah. Do the trick better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know either. And someday we'll do it. You know, like, again, I cannot stress enough, like, I like this. It sounds like I'm negative on it.
Yeah.
It's just, what's happened, I think, is that I've played a lot of games that I've gotten the por que no los dos, and I have a taste for more.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What if I had the Castlevania level design and the Metroidvania, you know, exploration mm-hmm. thing?
Yeah.
And they're called modern 2D Souls-likes.
Yeah. Like, you know, where, you know, every individual enemy and every individual platform or screen matters.
Yes.
It was, you know, it was put there. Yeah.
So here's a hallway with some guys in it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just a couple of things I was thinking about with this. I was expecting this was a snack. It's a light game. And mm-hmm. again, cannot stress enough. I enjoyed it. I was expecting to come back at this and be like, fuck yes. Like, that's what I was thinking about
mm-hmm.
going into, like, fuck yes. Mm-hmm. Aria of Sorrow. And I never got to fuck yes.
Yeah.
I had a pleasant enough time and it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You
cool.
know,
yeah,
there's a potato chip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's I think my younger eyes thought this was very impressive. It's like when you're young and you go to Red Lobster and you think it's fancy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, you know,
Gary, the biscuits have cheddar in them.
I know. It's a biscuit that's two things.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah,
and the shrimp has corn syrup in it. It's two things.
Also, because related to that level design and structure kind of deal, in this one, I really, really felt the distance between teleport spots.
Oh my goodness!
You have to go so
those are placed at seeming random.
Yeah,
there is a general degree of sloppiness to the level design in this, where the levels that there are two kinds of rooms. We talked about them as if they're a hybrid, but they tend not to be. They tend to be, here's a hallway with some guys in it,
mm-hmm.
and it's featureless. Or here's like what would be an actually interesting navigation gauntlet
mm-hmm.
with the worst and most irritating enemies spawning in great numbers, seemingly randomly.
Mm-hmm.
Like here's a clockwork thing with spikes and disintegrating floors, and it's kind of interesting. But here's like four harpies and then Medusas the whole time just to mm-hmm. cover 80% of the screen while you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there is for a game that is this marquee and this mm-hmm. well loved, the degree of what feels like thoughtlessness
mm-hmm.
is bonkers.
Yeah, it kind of feels like somebody used like a paint bucket tool. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like they just spilled a bunch of enemies all over it.
Yeah.
You know.
Oops, all Cagnazzas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like there's two Cagnazzas on the way up here. I don't know. Like those might be interesting to fight.
Gotta nuke something.
Yeah, yeah. It's really got that kind of sense to it. And that's, it sucks because that's in contrast with, and this is I'm sure a point like a little bit later, the actual like designs of the little fucked up dudes are great.
Oh, I mean, like, it's right there. I mean, yes, it's reusing a lot of assets. So.
Yes, you know, but a lot of those assets are reused.
Uh-huh.
But Castlevania has some of the great fucked up dudes.
Oh yeah, yeah. It is the strength of the series.
Yes, like I'm gonna fight a wide variety of weirdos,
mm-hmm.
and they all move a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not that different to fight, but they're a little bit different. And they all have like unique ability. Like it's very neat.
Mm-hmm.
The wide cast. It just sucks that they're spilled on the floor like Legos.
I would like to see them deployed with a little bit more intention.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the big mechanical overlays that would be weird, awkward for me to try to fit in. Like, well, the junction between the library and the ballroom is where I first noticed. I don't know.
It
all kind of comes together.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I mean, talking about the scarcity of teleport points, man, it is really dumb to have teleports and saves be different rooms.
Yeah, 100%. Like, there's no reason not to do those at the same time or have them next to each other.
Yeah,
if that's a mechanical thing.
No, you've got to go 5-10 rooms to get between one or the other. Yeah.
Yep. Last little bit. That's a mechanical kind of view of the whole game. Mm-hmm. Is we're talking about the economy of this a little bit.
Oh yeah.
You know, so one of the high value collectibles, the reason why you're going around these rooms and exploring, because there are comparatively few items in this. Mm-hmm. You're picking up less like food.
Yeah,
you know, and stuff like that than you are in a symphony, is to get money. And you're getting money for Hammer's shop, which will allow you sometimes to jump the curve for weapons. Mm-hmm. You know, every once in a while you can buy a meaningful weapon. The marquee thing about this that is something I philosophically really kind of loathe is the very expensive item, the ring that you can get.
The luck ring,
It's not called luck ring. It's the one that lets you get better souls.
Soul ring or something, yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it just gives you it doubles the soul percent drops. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really expensive. To me, that signals that the way that we talked about this as being a good time, which is you go through, you find something you like and it works for you and you say, fuck yeah, let's party, is not what the developers are signaling to the player.
Yeah.
They're saying, grind up enough money for this thing and then use this thing to collect them all.
Yeah.
And I kind of hate how much what that ring represents.
And collect them all is its own grinding. Yeah.
Yes. Like grind to grind. Mm-hmm. Like, we've made a short game. We just want you to walk back and forth in hallways, you know, trying to kill the same thing until it drops its soul. And kind of bums me out a little bit.
I've got no idea. I can manufacture somebody in my head who says, like, oh yeah, this was made for, it's like Dragon Quest. It was made for commutes, right?
Yes.
Like, there is that element, but I'm in America. We don't have public transit.
Yeah, we don't commute. Well, and even if it is, that's never a critical argument.
You're right.
Like the idea that you know, you can just turn hours into a sense of progress with this is not something to talk about in terms of game analysis. Like, it's you know, you can do that also by a cup and ball. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you can do that with anything.
Yeah.
You know, if you make it that repetitive. So, like, I don't know. It's just this weird thing that's a middle finger in that shop inventory to me. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously I didn't get it because I'm not interested in doing that. But, like, when you read about this game, you know, it's about strategies to get that quickly so you can be a completionist.
No. And just, like, more about the economy. The shop becomes useless for anything but health and magic ups.
Yes.
About a third of the way through it because it just stops getting new stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a weird, the reduced scale of this, there is a weird, I needed more items in this, which kind of aggravates the, you know, the same way that, like, the good things about this genre work off of each other. You know, like, they don't work really well in a vacuum, but they're good together. The bad things also have that impact. So the idea that there was such a smaller scale of items and things to get meant that when you are, like, exploring, there are fewer of those jumps. Mm-hmm. The number of times I would find a weapon that was just a strictly worse version of what I had now was more than Symphony of the Night. Mm-hmm. There's fewer differences in those, you know, and it's like the shop couldn't update. Mm-hmm. You know, because what would they put in there? Like, everything has been used.
Mm-hmm. Everything has been used, or everything is, like, weaker. Okay.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And there are different movesets. Like, there are different attack patterns for some of the items, but, like, I don't know. Like, you get the big fuck off sword that attacks for, like, 3 tumble widths ahead of you, and that's that problem solved. Right.
Yep. The early game is much more exciting than the late game because the early game is about privation, and then the late, like, the last two thirds of the game is just about being on top of this power curve and kind of riding it. Mm-hmm. And that's when it becomes, like, a little bit of a power fantasy.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit, I think, worse.
Yeah.
You know, so
there's some new modes that unlock when you beat the game. There's new game plus, you have boss rush, pretty standard. Something that's pretty neat is Julius mode.
Very similar to the Richter mode.
Yes.
In Symphony of the Night. Like, this is a standard thing where they give you kind of an old Castlevania moveset to go through a new Castlevania, which is a super fun idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved getting this because it was just a complete surprise when I did it back in the day. Again, didn't know about Richter mode. Yeah. So, like, whoa, wild. It's a whole different game in this.
Yeah. It's a great looking game. It is a Game Boy Advance game, so there's low amounts of detail, but like the portraits are detailed. It reuses a lot of assets from previous titles, but they look good. Mm-hmm. And the new assets all look good as well.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. You get a couple of enemies, just funny, the zombie soldier or whatever that has grenades.
Yeah.
Love that guy. Love that little guy. Looks good. The complaints about Circle of the Moon and Harmony of Dissonance, those were designed for the original Game Boy Advance, which had no backlight and were incredibly dark. This one is actually lighter and more colorful, which I think even when you're playing this on the Switch, like I did, even with a brighter screen, is just more attractive, which isn't to say there isn't joy to be found in a Circle or Harmony. But this one does have a little bit more life to it.
Agreed.
This is the last of the 2D Castlevania games that would have kind of the Castlevania standard like painterly character designs after this. It would kind of become a little bit more anime-esque the next two, and then Order of Ecclesia would bend a little bit more toward the classic style, but still be line art anime kind of thing, as opposed to brushy.
Yeah, and this is still pretty brushy anime, and we've got a pretty Bishonen protagonist here.
Of course,
here. We've moved full Bisho. This is a very talky Castlevania game. I don't particularly care for this. That's obviously not going to surprise anybody. I don't really think these games are good for story.
Nope.
This one has a twist in it that I think is fine, but then you solve it with the power of friendship and I'm irritated. It's just a weird, the way it interrupts like plays into the level design as well. So like the way the story is told, you get your opening scroll, nothing wrong with that. And you go out to the castle. Every once in a while, the castle, somebody interrupts you. There's a specific bespoke short hallway that you walk into that somebody has to have a little scene in. This is now just on the map. So not only do you have to kind of go through the scene with this, melodrama with these very, transparent, characters, like the guy who is obviously evil, the guy, the dark, brooding guy who is obviously like tough, but good, Dr. Acula, Dr. Alucard, Acula Dick, which is the backwards. So you run into all those guys, but then they fuck up navigation. So they like kind of kill the pacing twice. It's not a big deal to go through those rooms, but there are a lot of them. And this is something that Symphony did too, but this does it more.
I can only think of one very good story thing in all of Castlevania, which is the scene where you relive what happened to Alucard's mom.
I was just about to bring that up. Like it's personal. And this is on top of the dialogue in this being no great shakes. There's this amazing at the end where the villain just accuses you of theft and you have to go to jail. It's a real Skyler White moment. I'm just like, you fucking square. Just real silly stuff. Would you still like me if I was different? I don't know. It is full of cliches.
I would rather you be the same on the inside and the different on the outside.
I couldn't have done it without the Care Bear stare. At the end, it is full of cliches, and I can't imagine playing these games for plot, but there, it takes all kinds. There are people who are very invested in the lore of these games, and for me, I personally don't get it.
Can't see it, won't see it. All I need is Dracula's back, and he needs to not be back anymore.
Or do like an Infernax and like have the dialogue be like kind of funny. If it's going to be there, like that is a better tone to take for it than this extremely dramatic kind of thing. On the curve of Castlevania stories, there's certainly more of it, but I would argue that it's not better than just Dracula's back and it's time to go get him. It's more complicated, but I don't think it's better.
Music owns in this. It's very good. This is actually like a concerted step up. This is a response to criticism of the previous, specifically of Harmony of Dissonance. And they specifically brought back the composer for Symphony of the Night, Michiru Yamane, for this one in order to give it the juice. And the juice is there.
The juice is loose. It's real good. Koji Igarashi returned to direct this game, which was revealed only a few months before it was released. The Return of the King in 2003.
Bring that back. Bring it back. like, oh, hey, here's this game that's coming out. It's like in a month.
Oh, there you go. The surprise drop.
Yeah.
Well, there have been a few games I've done it. It's kind of coming back, and it feels great.
Yeah, the rhythm beat them up. Yeah,
yeah. Fuck a hype cycle.
Yeah,
you know.
The development of this began alongside the production of Harmony of Dissonance. You know, for a while, like this was not annualized, but pretty close. You know.
Yeah.
They intended to shake things up by having this set in the future. Remember, we said this is 2035. That does not factor in at all. This is not, you know, Dracula 2000, we're in space kind of stuff. This is still just a medieval castle, except at one point you can find a gun, and the gun is terrible.
The gun's horrible, and one zombie throws a grenade.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, again, that would have been a cool idea if they did that. But it's like the future, and then you immediately go to a realm, a timeless realm. Like, it, you know, does not matter.
Yeah.
Soma returns in Dawn of Sorrow, also the protagonist of that, which is a direct sequel to the events of this game and also a very good game.
Mm-hmm.
And this game got a re-release bundle with Circle of the Moon and Harmony of Dissonance, as well as a couple other ones. What else is in there?
I thought it was just the three.
No. There's a couple other ones in there. Dracula X. There's a couple things else that are part of there. That is the Castlevania Advance collection. Came out in 2021.
It's possibly like one of the easiest recommendations one could ever make in terms of buying that, like getting these three again candy games for $20.
Yes. Like,
fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're 100% candy. Good candy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dracula X is the fourth one.
Yes. There we go. Yeah. I did a search on that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't talking on my ass.
No.
It's a really robust collection. There are save states. You can switch between the Japanese and English versions of things. There are also some quality of life.
It's got rewinds. Things. Yeah.
It's got very specifically in this game, it gives you a little, if you've already collected the soul of an enemy, a little thing will pop up. Mm-hmm. Previous to this, if you weren't sure if you had collected the soul, you'd have to check the bestiary.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Big menu tax. They got rid of that.
Yeah.
So, which is good.
Yeah.
This episode will be a little bit hard when we get into it in this. There is not a whole lot of level design to speak of. So, like, talking about an area, we're talking about an enemy palette.
Yeah.
Generally, and a couple set pieces.
Yeah. So, this is going to be a pretty quick episode, too, if you couldn't tell by the fact that we're already done with generalities.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's okay to check in. You know, it is a thing where... You know, I like all of these games.
Mm-hmm.
It might be hard to find something to talk about with Harmony of Dissonance.
Yeah.
You know, if we were to do it. But it is worth checking in every once in a while. And at the very least, like, coming at this with a perspective, since the last time I played one of these, having played this new crop of games that are inspired by it, but also inspired by other things, you know, old Castlevania and Dark Souls, has really kind of put this in a light.
Yes.
For me, which has made it worthwhile to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Things open up with this opening crawl. We have Soma walking up the long stairs toward this shrine, toward Hakuba Shrine, looking to visit his childhood friend Mina Hakuba, who, you know, is the daughter of the caretaker here. It's the year 2035. Like we said, this could not matter less.
No, it is the future, which just means that you can be a teen and just wear a fur coat.
Yes.
And it's considered fashionable. That is the main change for 23 in the speculative fiction of this.
Yeah.
Fur is no longer murder. It's sick. the stairway stretches on forever ahead of them. And they're going up here because of the eclipse.
Yes.
They're this once in a lifetime's eclipse they're going to see. And when the eclipse happens, a castle appears floating in the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
Which we get teleported to, and we're no longer in the future. We're in a realm.
We are in the sealed Dracula castle realm.
Yes, the castle is fully Draculated. We're at the entrance. Mina's here, and then a stranger runs to named Genya Arakaido.
Arakaido, which Arakaido. Is basically just the same pronunciation as Alucard would be in Japanese.
Yes. and backwards is Odakara, which, the... But yeah, this is Alucard. Mm-hmm. He says, listen, you're in Dracula's castle now, you fuck.
Welcome to hell.
Yeah, you've been sealed inside of the eclipse.
And
monsters attack here, and one of the first like hints, other than the fact that his name is Alucard, mm-hmm. that he's Alucard, is he does the soul steal thing from Symphony of the Night. Mm-hmm. Kills all of them except for one, which is a winged skeleton that comes up, and Soma almost reflexively attacks it and absorbs its soul.
Yes.
Giving you the ability to toss spears.
Yeah. And Eric Carter says, oh, okay, so you're that guy. Something's awakened in you. You know, if you're looking for answers as to what this means, you know, make your way toward the throne room and don't worry about Mina. She's going to hang out here. I'll put a seal up or whatever.
Yeah. He does say that you have to hurry because I don't know how long it'll last. This isn't a thing.
Right.
Just narrative conceit. As we start in the castle corridor, Castlevania tradition, this long area stretches across most of the castle. Mm-hmm. From west to east, with mostly zombies.
Yeah.
You know, who just rise out of the ground and attack you. Skeletons who toss bones, and then axe armors who are going to fight. Who are always more intimidating looking than they are difficult. Yeah. But it is introducing, you know, there is a little bit of complexity to this combat, you know, in that you can, I can't remember if this is true in all of these, but you can destroy all projectiles, basically, which kind of feels a little bit like a parry. With these guys, and ducking matters a lot. There are a lot of direct, you know, attacks that are on a certain axis, so there's a lot of ducking in the right spot
between kind of, you know, attacking the projectiles, get rid of them, doing the ducking, the thing that we find here, you know, the first utility, so we get the Gravekeeper, which lets you do the backdash, which is mapped to the L button. Like, it very quickly becomes like a really good fighting system. You have a lot of you have a lot of ability to address the threats in front of you.
Yes. You know, and again, we're talking generally about first third when it's a little bit hard. Once you eventually get some levels and some abilities, this kind of fades. But early on, it's very much this.
Yeah.
You reach the first boss, the Creaking Skull, which is great. It's a big giant skeleton head and torso that's crawling around towards you with a big bone club.
Yeah.
This is going to be a moveset a lot of enemies are going to have where they kind of hold their weapon above, like they're going to hit. You have to get in there, get in your hit, and then backdash.
Yeah. Specifically is, you know, teaching you how to use the backdash to get out of the way of stuff coming in. Understanding, you know, enemy attack range really does matter. Below this, you get to like this flooded area where you can find the castle map, which will show you, you know, roughly a third of the castle, let you know which direction things are going to be in. You also get the flying armor soul, which is your glide. This consumes MP while it's out. And I basically never unequipped this because the transformation stuff, I wanted to save my MP for other stuff.
Yeah. The transformation stuff is very good. It's just, this feels like this should have been a basic movement thing. Like this shouldn't have been an equipable. It just, it adds a little bit of a menu tax. Yeah. Something that can be fixed in a remaster. Easy.
Yep.
Climbing these towers gets you these upper portions where you fight crows, these boers, B-U-E-Rs, these demon wheels. They roll down the stairs, zombie soldiers, which stab with a knife and have grenades, and then white dragons, which we've seen before, those skeleton dragons. Here is where the random drop system can be work in your favor. A zombie soldier dropped a combat knife
for me,
which was like three times more powerful than anything else I had. Like I just started one-shotting things at low range, and for the beginning part of this, it was really interesting as a trade-off. Because I'd have to get really close, but I could do a lot of DPS.
And I mean, like the fact that you start with just Soma's pocket knife, like you have very limited range for a good portion of the beginning of this. So like that combat knife, it was just a straight stat upgrade. You know, actually I made a note of like the first actual like weapon with reach that you get over in the chapel. So
early on it is a trade-off between those things before it's all great swords.
You do run into your first mysterious stranger here. Arikado is not a stranger because we know exactly who he is. And this is our villain. This is a guy in a snappy white suit. His name is Graham Jones, and he claims to be a missionary. And he talks about good.
I just fuck this guy.
I
don't, I mean, I know you're supposed to be fuck this guy, but just looking at him makes me mad. And just everything he says is so dumb. And my character being so credulous drives me nuts. He's just like, no, no, Dracula's quite real. I'm a missionary of sorts. Do you believe in Dracula's? No, I thought Dracula's were fake. No, they're quite real, my boy. Like, I don't know. This fucking sucks.
I love the logic of that, because, you know, someone's like, I didn't think Dracula was real. And it's like, oh yes, the story, you know, Dracula is real. The story was leaked as fiction to the rest of the world, implying this conspiracy. Why would they do it?
I don't know why they would leak it at all. It's like, also in this world, the army went and fought Dracula in 1999.
Uh-huh. So like, which we never Dracula, saw. This Nostradamus. That's a great,
yeah. Yeah, game. You know, the idea of the army versus Dracula as a Castlevania is a cool idea.
Uh-huh.
Like, give me Castlevania Tactics. But like, I don't know, an army was deployed.
Yeah.
How did that, you know, why was it leaked and how was it not pre-leaked?
The 1999 Nostradamus Dracula accident.
Yes.
just funny, like implying that there is this conspiracy, like that is legitimately a conspiracy theorist tactic, mm-hmm. which is to say that like, oh, movies are real because it is a lesser form of demonic magic. They have like, it's predictive programming. They have to put it into the culture because it's part of a contract with interdimensional demons. Like, it's full on Alex Jones shit.
Yeah. That shit is so funny to me, because they're like, you know, all these cartoons and things that show the twin towers collapsing, mm-hmm. that were priming us to be okay with when the twin towers fell, when our country lost its fucking mind for 25 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, we weren't okay at all.
No.
Nothing was like, it was it fucked us up horribly. Like, and they're just like, no, it's just to make sure you were nice and complacent.
Yeah.
I wasn't complacent. Uh-huh. Like, do you know how many people's cousins joined the military because of that? Yeah. Like, everybody's like buzz-cutted cousin went to the military for that.
Oh yeah, no, it was,
you know,
just, yeah.
A good thing that was no big deal, because I watched cartoons about it.
Beds are real because the movie Oblivion had them.
Ugh. Yeah,
yeah.
It's all stupid. He says, you know, there actually are Draculas. Dracula comes back when people get lost and crave chaos and destruction. So he says there's a prophecy that in 2035, during the eclipse, someone can inherit all of Dracula's powers. And here is it here or when next time when he says, I was born on the day that Dracula died?
It's next time.
Okay. One of the dumbest lines of anything.
Yeah.
And why doesn't my character go, that's my birthday too, man? Which like would just be a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Like, if I met somebody with my exact birthday, I'd say something.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's obviously evil. We go to the chapel. This is a vertical area at the east end of the castle. There are these bell towers at top and large kind of sanctuaries and ballrooms below.
Yeah. This is a small area, really, in terms of things to do, like big rooms full of ball dancing ghosts or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the primary thing you get here is a boss fight against a manticore who will shoot fireballs from its mouth, but also attack with its poisonous tail, do like a sting. Yes. I was not able to discern what poison does, either. And I forgot
it doesn't drain your health.
It feels bugged.
I assumed it was bugged, or maybe it stops you from regaining health.
Maybe it's possibly like it makes you more susceptible to damage. I really should have like looked it up and found out.
Well, it's hard to want to, because it's such a non-issue in the game.
Yeah,
it's weird. There are there's three status effects in this. There's curse, poison, and stone, and none of them matter very much. Stone can be a little bit irritating.
Mm-hmm.
Curse just drains your mana bar, but since it refills automatically, that's usually okay. You just wait a little bit.
No.
You know, and that's really it. Poison doesn't seem to do anything.
No.
The enemies here, one of my favorite, I like the ghost ballroom dancers.
Oh yeah.
these couples that are waltzing across mm-hmm. the screen. You know, they're an aerial problem, like a Medusa, basically. Yeah. But they're a nice little bit of flavor.
Yeah.
There.
Also like the giant ghosts. Just the huge skulls, the demi lich looking things.
Yeah.
And then a few standbys, like the Une plants are very annoying, because at least here they're always a little bit set into the ground. But they're like little depressions that they're in, so you can't like attack the main one.
And depending on your weapon.
Yeah.
Like they're weapons that will attack below you.
Yeah, there's a spear that'll do a sweep. But those Une plants, they reproduce with their projectiles.
Yes. Kind of a pain.
Yeah.
You know, but classic, classic enemies. One thing about the giant ghost is it's interesting how rarely or how inconsistently in this game, the intimidation factor of an enemy factors into how tough it is.
Yeah.
This is something that like I've been thinking about a lot lately, partly because of, you know, because we did it with Lisa, which I think that's kind of an issue in Lisa where you don't know how tough something's going to be by looking at it. That happens here too. Like every once in a while, there'll be a giant golem and you're like, yeah, obviously, but these skulls just fucking melt.
Yeah.
You know, they're nothing. There are a lot of enemies that look like a lot and they're not, and then enemies that look like they'd be easy and they're really tough. And the reason that matters is because you're using resources and deciding how to use resources. So some amount of signaling is generally good. Like you want to have a tonberry occasionally, you know, that tricks you, but you don't want to have oops all tonberries.
No, not at all.
It was a long walk, but I'm glad I got there.
Okay. I was like, was that an accident? Because rolls.
No. I was walking there, but I keep my cards close to my best.
That was good.
We go next to the study. The study rests below the chapel. Lots of these student witches. These are great. When they get killed, they turn to a cat and run away. And their weapon is summoning a cat. It's great. Those guys are great.
I love how they bumble around. They're a couple of just like very cute enemies. I'm not just saying that because they are young women, but like they exist to kind of be just like a little bit ineffectual.
Well, there's an area that's all lady enemies that, according to cut content, was once called the harem. And you know, according to I was reading about TV tropes, and you better believe some tropers are just into, man, sometimes I just want to not fight them and watch them bounce, quote unquote. And I got skeeved out. At the end of a long hallway here, we get our first kind of big sword you can get, the bastard sword. This has a much better reach than your staring dagger, but your playthrough will be different because of random enemy drops. Shortly after this, I got the battle axe. From a random drop, and that was my go-to weapon for the first third of the game.
It's really good because it attacks kind of like in an upward arc.
It does upward and downward. It can attack below you. It's slow to attack, but it had like 78 attack damage when my next highest thing was like 50.
Like with this one, I ended up using the bastard sword. Like again, early in the game, you get these good trade-offs. The bastard sword did a little bit less damage than like a shorter weapon with less reach. I still, you know, went for suboptimal damage in order to get the, you know, the additional
hitbox. Did you get the whip sword?
Yes, I did later on. I didn't make a note about it, but that was that's kind of a similar thing. I used that a little bit.
That's also in the toolbox for being a thing that, you know, just has very, very far reach, only on one plane. But it's really good for the golem enemies that you have to duck down below and hit, or the armors that you can only hurt their feet. We run into evil butchers.
just bondage ogres that'll throw their knives at you. And you get the one pushable block in this library.
I can't believe they did this. It's so funny. It's used for a puzzle. There's an obvious place to use it, but you can push it down to the bottom and get an item. And then no more.
No more. Like that down in the canals, like in the sewers, you can push a boat.
There's a boat you can push.
But that's it.
I don't want more block pushing puzzles. I actually kind of admire the restraint of it. It's just very funny because it's so unusual. You know? we can't get out of there. It's bigger than all the doors. You know? Like it's a realm. It just materialized with one block.
Well, it's also super funny because Soma does, there's no push animation as well. So it's just Soma like just running straight into it forehead first.
Grinding agility in Oblivion.
This gets you to a library with some bigger enemies. Here you got Arachne, Quelax, really good enemy design on that, and then curse factors in here. You've got these ectoplasm kind of guys.
And what curse does is it drains your MP, as you mentioned. It's time for NPC time now. You run to another hallway where we reach a blonde woman named Yoko Belnades. We know that last name. That's Saifa's last name. She almost slips and calls Ericato Elucard, and says she's with a church.
Yeah.
Here. She exists to be super damseled in this.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a damsel stack out at the front of the castle.
There's a problem with the damsel.
Yeah. We're stacking damsels like cordwood down at Alucard's daycare for damsels.
down at Hammer's weapon shop and damsel emporium.
Hammer's leer and gear.
Oh man. We get a bunch of like hemming and hawing because she refers to Soma's powers as being dark, and Soma's like, but I'm a good person. And she says, no, it doesn't necessarily mean evil. It's, you know, it's a tool, right? Like as a, you know, as a knife, whatever, you can use it for good or bad. She's like, hey, stay away from that guy who's obviously the bad guy. Graham seems to be wanting to inherit the powers of Dracula. So
yes, who what led you to believe this? How did you figure that out? I think that the writing in this game wouldn't feel so bad to me if our hero wasn't just a gormless fucking moron. But I'm a good man. I hope she likes me. And I get like he's a teen, and maybe this is just me being over fucking teens. Yeah. You know? But I actually, you know, I don't know.
So there is like a disconnect between the character design and the way that he talks, right? The fact that he is so pretty and wears that fur coat or whatever does make him feel older. Like if I looked at that character design, you know, knowing the way it is hard to tell ages in games like this, I would still say like, oh yeah, this is an adult, but he's supposed to be in high school.
And even as a high school, he's basically has the intelligence of a Hank Venture, you know, like he is real baby town frolics.
Yeah.
In terms of his mental, you know, his understanding what's going on.
Yeah. Well, and he also does the annoying thing where he's just an echo for a lot of
the
this.
Echo questions are fucking out of control in this.
Yeah.
I get not everybody's bothered by them, but they're fucking nuts.
Yeah.
In here, there are a lot of them. So if you are, just know. Mm-hmm. Echo question central.
Yes.
Once you get past this, we get to the boss of this area, the Great Armor. This huge, tall, takes up the whole screen. Big set of armor with a long sword, really high defense.
Yeah.
This is great. It's a good boss. You have to dodge twice to avoid the sword swing. So it's really about getting in or getting out or finding safe spots.
Yeah.
Where you can do attack. This was really interesting because I had my battle axe at this point and I had that whip sword. Mm-hmm. The whip sword was better because I could hit his feet, hit his vulnerable area.
Yeah.
You know, from a greater distance. So I could only backdash once, but I only did half the damage. So I had to make this interesting trade off here.
Mm-hmm. And also like he will march you into a wall, so understanding when you need to like just to take the hit and then dash through him.
Like this boss quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a good one. And all these bosses that we're talking about to some degree will be reused as basic enemies later on, so this becomes a model for tougher stuff later.
There are some palette swaps in this for sure.
Then we run into the most baffling NPC, Hammer. Who is an army guy. The general character portrait style in this, everybody has this problem a little bit, but he really exemplifies it. He's giving you real fuck me eyes.
he is giving you a little fuck me eyes. It's because he knows you're gonna bring him damsel after damsel. For him to watch over. He is an army guy who got trapped in the castle. I says, hey, meet me at the front of the castle, I'm looking to set up a shop there. It's like, all right, man,
cool.
After we beat the boss, we get a soul vessel here for the Malphus utility soul, the ability soul here, which lets us double jump. Very early in the game to get a double jump, but I'm always happy to see an early double jump.
Yeah.
Which lets us explore further into the chapel. So we can find some extra weapons. We locate our first teleporter, which takes us back to the entrance so we can go frequent the shop.
Yes.
Of course, it's not right next to it. There's still like a little chore because the teleportation room placement is bad in this. But
and if you want to save your game next to the shop or the main teleport point, you've got to go 5 screens down past a bunch of brewmen.
It's very silly. Yeah. Save your game or refill your health, which they also do with those things.
Yeah.
save your game or refill your health, which they also do with those things.
So we've got the dance hall as the next place we can go, the next place we can get to with the double jump here. This is above the western portion of the castle corridors, kind of closer to the entrance. And then we run into somebody else, so it's very obvious who he is, primarily because he's dressed like his the character from Crimson Peak. You run into a strange man who calls himself Jay. Saying, like, I recently woke up from a coma. And I've got amnesia following this incident back in 1999, which means he's been in a coma for 36 years.
Yeah. Oh my God. All my friends are dead. So he came here because of the prophecy, hoping to get his memory back because his magical powers have something to do with Dracula. Yeah. This is such a silly mansion that all these people are wandering around with amnesia and secret identities. It's like Clue that you're doing on this fucking huge map full of monsters. I don't know why they grafted that onto this. It's so silly. We're going to run into him later. There are new enemies here. There are wood golems who are really tanky, and they can kick rocks at you. Floating dolls. Floating dolls have a really cool soul thing where you throw a little baby doll out that will draw aggro. This was my first sign that, like, you know, even bullet souls were not going to be weapons all the time. They're gonna hide like cool utility stuff, and it works on bosses. Like, it's really good. And then minotaurs, who are great designs.
Like a regular enemy that is really requiring you to know how to use the backdash, right?
Yes.
He's got this big axe that he swings. Asgulham has long reach. The boss here is the big golem. I would quibble with putting this right next to the armor because it feels very similar. Again, absolutely huge, as tall as the screen. But there's a lot of them to hit. He is not like does not have as high of a resistance as that armor had. He will do like stomps and whatever, but his most dangerous attack is he just spits out a bunch of rocks.
So just your placement. At this point, I had also gotten the soul for the rock armor. Which tosses a rock in an arc, and that's really good against this guy. You just jump and do that a few times. It'll hit him a couple times. Quite powerful. Beating him gets you the skeleton blaze utility, which a vape blend, if I've ever heard one. This lets you do the crouch dash. Do a slide. It's also an attack. That you'll take damage, and the enemy will also take damage. It's really good for areas. It would be good to get this before you fight the golem and the armor, because this is really good for getting past them. Without taking too many hits. You'll still hurt you, but you can get through them faster if they corner you in a wall.
I wish that the soul that you got had anything to do with the ability that you have. Why does the skeleton blaze let you do this?
Likes to slide around.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's a sled enthusiast. I don't know.
But this lets you get through a little morph ball hole that will get you to the inner quarters. Kind of this more, it's like the upper central part, kind of a fancier finish kind of deal. Notably, the dance hall had very few people dancing. I do not know why it was called that.
Called that. It's grandfathered in. New enemies here. We have Persephone, who are these maids who will throw things at you. The hilarious skeleton waiters, who are skeletons in suits who throw curries at you. These are great. I mean, God put that in my vein. That's the exact kind of absolutely silly bullshit that you want from Castlevania. And then zombie officers, who are big, tall zombies. They look like cyber zombies from Shadowrun to me a little bit. You know, stab forward with these gigantic swords. You just need to duck as they march towards you and get in damage before they get to you.
And then classic Symphony of the Night enemy returning here, Nemesis. It's this invisible woman. You can only see her like a shadow flickers, but she flies around and does these big sword attacks, and you damage her by damaging the sword.
I never got that soul, but I was curious as to what it was. There's a hall here you find with a chronomancer, which is the rabbit from Alice in Wonderland. Little rabbit with a stopwatch rewinds time and kicks you back into the main part of the inner quarters. We need a special soul to get that, and then we get that ability from him. He's a unique enemy. There are a couple of unique enemies in the game, which I like. That's a cool idea.
Again, the silly bullshit of just the rabbit from Alice in Wonderland having it here.
Realm rules. The boss of this area is great.
I love this.
This feels like a reference to the Terry Gilliam film Baron Munchausen. To me. It's a lady. It's called the Headhunter. It's this lady who is on a Shea Lounge. This mannequin that puts on different heads that give her different abilities. It's a three-phase fight.
Right.
Here,
you know, starts as a fancy lady who like dances around and does slow attacks. But when you do enough damage and the mannequin head explodes, another head comes down and it's a little bit tougher. Turns into this old man, kind of like mage kind of guy who flies around and does, you know, big pattern spells. Right.
Yep. And then becomes this dragon, gets this dragon head and becomes a lizard man. Who fights kind of like Spider-Man, like sticks to the ceiling, spits poison, attacks with his long tongue. Mm-hmm. Really cool. This is a mandatory soul drop. You always get this. No. And the soul drop is one that gets more, gives you bigger stat buffs depending on how many souls you've collected. So again, enforcing that collect them all kind of mentality.
Yeah.
Long rooms, you go to these long rooms with mirrors here. This has this great enemy. I love this. These things called Kioma demons. They take the place of your reflection. So you're seeing your reflection. Then you see a monster. And if you turn your back and if you stop for a second, it attacks you.
It leans out of the mirror to stab you in the back. And then you got to turn. It's so sneaky. I love how he thinks he's getting one over on you.
It's so cool. Yeah. It's a really, really imaginative little thing.
Yeah. Very fun to figure out. This gets you out into the ramparts where you find one of these enemies that only exists on these little switchbacks, you know, little staircases, these disc armors, which send out like Rygar glaives at you.
Yes.
That will detach and come after you. And you're coming up here to get one of these yellow souls, one of these enchantment souls that is a traversal ability. You need to get the Undyne soul, which lets you walk on the surface of water.
Walk in the surface, yeah.
What's walk up?
Or this isn't the one that lets you sink yet.
Right. This is the one that makes you walk, walk across it, which all that makes me think of is the season 3 episode of Arrested Development where I think Tobias gets caught on fire, but the...
because he throws himself into the pool and it doesn't work.
Yeah. Why am I not sinking? Because Job altered it for a magic trick.
So now that we have this, we can get to the floating gardens. We walk across the water in the flooded portions of the castle corridor near the beginning. Mm-hmm. And this is a tough area. This next stretch I think is tough because this is where they're trying to do environmental hazards. Like generally these are all just rooms full of guys, but they're all tough guys. Mm-hmm. This first one. And then it becomes environmental hazards on top of tough guys.
Yes.
It's this big multi-level courtyard with tough enemies. We have these dead warriors, these charging horsemen. Their hitboxes are nonsense for them. And then cockatrices, which can paralyze you. And the way paralysis works in this, it's the one meaningful status effect. Mm-hmm. You have to tap buttons to get out of it. And while you're paralyzed or while you're turned to stone, you take double damage.
Yeah.
So you have to do that really quick.
Mm-hmm. And that gets crazy when you run into areas with spikes mixed with Medusa heads, which we're going to run into. It'll be a real problem in the arena later on. But getting stoned above some spikes and then dropping onto those, that's a death sentence. That's what it is.
No good. And again, that kind of like lack of items. And maybe this is an obscure soul I would have had to grind for. Kind of surprised there isn't a petrification resistance.
Yeah.
Thing I can equip, you know, like I feel like in Symphony of the Night there would be a ring I could do that with. Here, not really. You just kind of have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. This has a little bit of an environmental thing, not anything that will cause damage to you directly, but because navigating the bottom of these the bottom portion of these gardens relies on these moving platforms, oftentimes while you are waiting for those, you are vulnerable to enemies.
Yes.
And you've got to like be nearby waiting for it to come down. Otherwise you're going to miss it. And if you miss it, you are exposed to the enemies for, you know, for more time.
A little bit longer.
Yeah. It's a whole thing where it's kind of neat how that environmental factor does add to danger without actually doing damage directly to you.
Yeah. It's also a little bit difficult to navigate because there are walls.
Yeah.
Between different parts, like not all levels of this have continuity between the left and right. Mm-hmm. A little bit like elevators that only go to certain floors.
Yeah.
You know, you get through this, you walk through a door and end up in this kind of strange repeated chambers floating above the castle. Mm-hmm. This is really weird. Mm-hmm. Your map isn't working. You don't have the map for this yet.
Yeah.
And it feels a lot like you are just going through like a time loop, but there's a different marquee enemy.
Yeah.
In the middle. And this is like a late game area.
Yes.
That you are in. That they just have you kind of preview here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're fighting devils here, which will harass you, follow you entirely around. They're gigantic, you know, big buff demon kind of guys who will summon big, very hard to avoid kind of like pattern spells or fireballs. And you've got like manticores and shit here as well. And also like they're connected in illogical ways. So where if you come into an area like from the left, if you go back out that left door, you will not go to the room that you just left to come in here. So like you've got to like, it's a little bit fuzzy how these are connected.
Yeah. Not my favorite zone.
No.
There's a strange door here that has this dark cloud energy. You try to go into it and it zaps you back. Just put that in your pocket. You have to remember that for the true ending.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, it feels kind of randomly placed. I don't know why they wouldn't put this, you know, behind, Dracula.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah. At the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Castlevania. So we got to go to the clock tower.
Oh yeah. And this clock tower, so we go to the entrance, it's in the floating gardens. Run to Graham, of course. This is where he's like, you know that Dracula I was talking to you about? Well, I was born on the day that Dracula's killed, which means I am Dracula. And like, come on, man. And you know, our gormless fuck who's like, that can't be right. You're so kind and friendly to me, and Dracula's are bad.
Uh-huh.
Like this mix of Hank and Dean Venture you play as in this game fucking drives me nuts.
Well, golly gee, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, what a fucking weird little idiot. Like, I understand this is the idea is you're making a bland protagonist who relies on the power of friendship to get through this for shonen reasons.
But you didn't have to do it for those reasons.
Yeah, you didn't have to do it in the first place. Like, give my character a little bit of personality. Like, Soma is so fucking bland and stupid. It drives me nuts. Yeah. I don't know. You know, there are people who like love their like Soma fan portals, and I'm guessing like they just like the outfit. You know, it's that thing that, you know, drives me nuts where like people just love a character design and then they round up characterization into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if you stylish, you can just like the coat.
Yeah. clothes exist. You could wear the coat. So
it's called cosplay. People do it all the time. It's neat.
Yeah, be Soma. So you're like, you've been so kind and friendly to me. It's like, oh, that's because you're not much of a threat. What do you have? You know, what is your power? And you say like your power is to rule souls.
Yeah,
you say something very out of character, like,
yeah, my power is to rule souls, like with the power to rule.
Yeah, like what? I like that. I better hurry up to the throne room. I'm not going to deal with you now. It's Team Rocket shit. It's just baby time frolics, and I'm not here for it.
I'm happy that you have cottoned on to the baby town frolics.
Thank you for the patron who wrote that in.
I did.
Yeah, that was from.
It's an Archer thing. I've said it before.
Oh, got you. Yeah. And somebody said it in a response, and that's where I was thinking of it most recently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is absolutely Baby Town Frolics. dislike. He's going to go claim that as own. And it's also really weirdly out of character that you're like, you say, you know, I grasp ultimate power or something like that. I can't remember what it is exactly, but it's very weird.
Yeah.
And if the idea was that was Dracula taking over for a second, they could have done that with some sprite work.
Uh-huh.
You know, they could have had like a shadow over your head. Like, you could communicate that better.
Yeah.
The story is, not only do I feel like it's unnecessary, I don't feel like it's very good.
It's gesturing vaguely at beats, at very perfunctory, just, you know, de rigueur. Like, yeah, this is just the kind of story. Like, it's got to hit this stuff. So.
And Igarashi didn't design this game. He wrote it. So like all of this, like Return of the King stuff, like you didn't direct it. You look at that. It's like, oh, this is why we wanted him back, was for the writing of this.
Yeah, no, thank you.
You know, good Lord. So the clock tower is very Castlevania clock tower, which means there are spinning gears and spikes and Medusa heads.
Mm-hmm.
It's tougher, I think, because they also mix in not mini boss, but like tougher kind of marquee enemies.
Yeah,
who are fairly tanky at this point, depending on what you've had drop.
These lightning dolls are going to show up in regions throughout the rest of the castle.
Yes.
And the way, you know, they are like the floating dolls, which will just hang perpetually in the path of, you know, where you need to platform. So they do not pass like Medusa heads go. But also they, you know, crackle with electricity, meaning that they will turn a good portion of the screen into a hurt box for you.
Yes. And my biggest issue with them, and then the bomb armors that are here as well, and the harpy, and there's two kinds of harpies. There's like one that's fine and one that's tougher.
Yeah.
They put the palette swap near them. It's just taking too many hits
at
this point. And you know, it's possible in the world of this game, I could have grinded out for better weapons or something. Mm-hmm. But if that's the answer, I reject that answer. You know, so while platforming, I feel like the reason why the Medusa head, a lot of people don't like the Medusa head as an enemy. I'm into the Medusa head. Mm-hmm. One, they're not random in Castlevania games. They're part of the design. Like they emerge at certain places that are intentional. Two, they die in one hit. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like a parrying challenge. Mm-hmm. When you put an enemy I have to stop and engage with while on moving platforms and spinning, mm-hmm. you know, gears and stuff, I don't think it works.
Yeah. No.
You know, and somebody's going to, you know, I don't want anyone to be like, you know, bad game, mad game mm-hmm. at this.
Mad cause bad.
Mad cause bad about this. I didn't like die a million times or anything. I just didn't think it was just super good.
They work athwart purposes to each other, the platforming and putting these more durable enemies in here. Yeah.
Yes. It didn't feel as elegant as it had in previous Castlevania games.
I don't want it to be one or the other. I want the enemies to be a better complement for the platforming. Yeah.
Yes.
The bomber armor soul's pretty good though. Like you throw the bomb and like it can only hit stuff that is near the ground because it will settle there because of gravity. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a delay, but it does a shitload of damage. Nice. So it's good for those bigger, like the large sprite enemies that are a little bit more predictable.
Yeah. I never had a drop. Mm-hmm. So after we get through this, we run to Yoko again and she says, "Oh, I just saw Graham run away in a panic. We have a chance to beat him. I'm going to go." Mm-hmm. Like do you say everything you think?
this could have been an email.
Yeah, you didn't have to update me on this. Do you know who I am? Like, and she kind of does at this point, but we didn't need to know this. Uh-huh. The boss here, really weirdly enough, is Death as well. This is a weird like mid-game climax. For this game, because this is a tough level, and then you fight Death.
Yeah.
Who in this game doesn't talk or anything?
He's not really a character.
No. Yeah. It's a two-phase fight. He starts with just his scythe mm-hmm. as a ghost.
Yeah.
You have to hit the scythe
mm-hmm.
while dodging little scythes.
Yes, little sickles. The second phase of this is so good.
It's a really good fight. Like God. It reminds me of Order of Ecclesia shit.
Yeah. Like where it has like extremely distinct attacks that have very different, kind of danger zones on them. Like there's mm-hmm. delay hits in this, like the follow through on his slash will make him will make the area behind him, hurt mm-hmm. you as well. So if you think you're safe back there, you are not. This really does feel like a cool little dance duel.
Yeah. It feels like a designed fight.
Yeah.
Whereas like with the big armor guy, they just had to wind him up and have him stand there. Mm-hmm. And it feels like he's just choosing between two attacks and moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. This feels reactive. You know, it feels like an actual fight with AI,
mm-hmm.
you know, really good fight. You get his soul, for this, which is one of the passive souls that will just make little scythes fly mm-hmm. out
yeah.
randomly. This, you know, it's hard to equip it because you have the hover armor. This is really great against some later bosses.
Yeah.
Here, and then you get the necessary upgrade here, the Skula soul, which allows you to walk underwater. So you actually sink. You have to switch between this and the Undine in order to navigate, which is a pain and should have just been a button press.
It should. Yeah. It should just be like I can, you know, double press down and then I can sink. Something there. Getting this will let you pass a certain screen that was flooded to get the lower portions of the clock tower, get some platforming across pendulums, things like that to go get items. But that's just for completion's sake. Where you actually want to go is, you know, to that flooded space, the underground reservoir. The underground reservoir.
Yes. Which we can now get down to. This is sewers and caves down here. We have new enemies, the Needles, which are these sea urchins.
Mm-hmm.
The Man-Eater. This thing's great.
Yep.
A skull with three eye tentacles that come out.
Uh-huh. It's a skull that rotates, too. Yes. Like, it's not always upright. Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. Mm-hmm. The Cognazzo, which is a demon. Yeah. This little demon, they kind of have a move set. What they like to do is dive at you. Like to try to get above at you.
It's a straight down dive compared to the Harpy or the Valkyries, which will do a diagonal dive.
Yes. Yeah. There's giant worms down here, which I don't know. You just hit, they just died in one hit for me. I don't know what they're
for. Yeah. There's a poison variant. I think that's the only difference. Yeah.
Mermen, a Triton, which is really great. This mm-hmm. human torso being carried by a fish that has a variety of attacks. Mm-hmm. At some point we'll shoot music notes at you.
Yeah. He'll blow his little conch shell and get you. I love this because, you know, it's the torso and then the shell kind of acts like a platform or a palanquin or whatever. And the feet, like it moves by principle of just having whole fish that walk on the fish heads as its legs.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. And then dryads who are, how do you like them apples? Wizard of Oz.
The soul of this is actually pretty good. It gets you the ability. So what they'll do is they'll throw their little fruits at you. And if they hit, it'll grow a tree on you and then you'll take damage over time while you're on the screen. Using that gets you the ability to throw that fruit and it will grow a little mini dryad on the enemy that will drain the health. To you. So it gives you like a little bit of a, not like a very powerful attack, but it's a way to recover health slowly by throwing these onto folks.
Anything that recovers health is good. Later I got the thing that directly heals you. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it's called. It's a variant of those little plants. Mm-hmm. But I got one of those and like, it's useful to have.
Yeah.
There's a waterfall here. We cannot get past, you actually need to use two different souls to get past it. You have to use your walk on water
to get up to
it, and then a transformation soul to charge through it. I wish there was a little bit more of that mixing and matching. Like that feels like a cool puzzle.
Yes.
To me.
It's a good use of the system. Yeah.
You want to get past there. Going past that gets you to the pirate ship, which gives you the best weapon in the game. Mm-hmm.
This forbidden area is a whole new biome, but it's not, you know, strictly necessary. Unless you want to jump the power curve or unless you want to get this important item for getting the true ending, this ancient book. There are three of these, and when you read them, it gives you a clue about one of the souls that you need to equip in order to get the true ending. There's no other clue in the game for what you need to do to make that happen.
Yeah. Other than, you know, a big intuitive leap. Yeah. You know, because you're kind of getting Dracula powers there. I really wish that those souls were all mandatory souls.
Yeah, same.
I really hate that, you know, if you want to do that, which, you know, I did because we're playing it for the show, you have to possibly grind up some souls. And depending on your luck, that will either be no big deal or a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where someone's gonna be like, oh, I had no problem. Like the succubus just dropped it. And I'm like, cool. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for you. You know, that didn't happen for me. It was a little bit of a chore.
I'm curious with the rewind in this. So somebody knows the answer to this. There's probably a fact. When is it determined that they are going to drop? Like, is it when they spawn on the screen? So like, could you just kill the thing? It doesn't drop anything. Rewind a couple of frames, kill it again.
I don't know.
Does it roll the dice on kill or on spawn? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't like there being dice rolled there.
Yeah.
like that would be, that is an easier way of going in and out of the screen. Uh-huh. I don't want an easier way to do a bad thing. I don't want to have to do the bad thing, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's one of those things. It's fairly frustrating. Mm-hmm. But that is how you get the true ending and go to the remix zone. Mm-hmm. There's also, so we go through that, we get to the underground graveyard here. Mm-hmm. This has the boss arena kind of right away. On our way here, there are all these blank humanoids that are coming. They're not, don't do damage to you.
Yeah.
On the way, they're kind of shuffling towards this room. They're shuffling towards Legion.
Yeah.
This is Grand Falloon from Symphony of the Night. Like, there are a lot of just direct callbacks.
Yes.
Here. One of the best bosses that Castlevania has ever devised.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, I think, execution and
concept,
concept and visual design. Always happy to fight this.
Yeah, well, I love like when you walk in and you see the core drawing in all of these blank bodies to surround it. Yeah. So if you haven't played Symphony of the Night, this is like a weird little core that gathers all of these bodies to be like a big shell around it. Yes. And you're in this donut shaped arena, and it is kind of chasing you around in its first phase. and you were trying to do damage to take out all four of the quadrants of the shell around it. But as it's going in this first phase, it's dropping these little blank guys behind that'll take pot shots at you, little attacks as you are trying to run away from this guy. And in the second phase, the core attacks you more directly.
Yeah, it's quite good. Mm-hmm. The there's a little bit annoying if you are a completionist. There's a little bit of annoyance here. Mm-hmm. This will drop its soul, but only if you've made it shed all of its corpses before yes. fighting the core here. And there's no way around that. So if you're going for a completionist playthrough and accidentally kill the core, mm-hmm. you have to start over.
Yeah,
which I'm not that person. I think you shouldn't be that person, but that does mm-hmm. suck.
Yes. Yeah, to make it missable like that.
Yeah. The actual reward here is the Gallimoth soul, which has a very weird description. Mm-hmm. A bunch of the descriptions in this lie to you uh-huh. about what they do. It says, this lets you recognize when time has been manipulated. That doesn't really describe what this does. Is let you get past the white rabbit.
It makes you immune to the rewind that the rabbit yes. does. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is cool. Like you want to go back there and get your cool sword, but that's not how I would phrase that. Mm-hmm. One of the army commanders one says, jump after taking damage to resist damage.
Uh-huh.
And what it does is it lets you cancel knockback. Mm-hmm. Like you still take damage. You can just jump out of a knockback,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is cool. Like I'm not going to equip a soul for it, yeah. you know, but it's a cool idea for a passive ability, but the description is awful.
Yeah, no, it's just outright lie.
Yeah. It's not what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But
back down in the graveyard, this is when Yoko gets damseled. Yeah. You walk in right after Graham has just stabbed her in the gut.
Yeah, her one weakness.
Yeah.
She was going after Graham and didn't count on him having a short knife. She's a magic lady. Yeah. You can play as her in Dawn of Sorrow. She's a Maria. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how she just got stabbed. Like everyone's an idiot in this game.
Seems like a miscalculation.
I can't plot where everyone is so stupid. It just drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. Not trying to cinema sense it. It just like makes it, I can't get invested in the story because everyone is too much of a goober. Yeah. He stabbed her. He runs away and you run up to her and you're like, don't die, stranger. Don't die. Mm-hmm. And, Ericato shows up and goes, hey, you know, go after Graham. I'll take care of her. I'll add her to the pile.
I got a pile of these.
Yeah. I got a collection going, and goes and puts her in the damsel pile down at the Lyran gear. Mm-hmm. Out front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we follow Graham into the arena. We're in an end game here.
Yes.
This is full of mid bosses, and this is the most egregious place where it's just like, I don't know, more enemies. Just filling it with way, way too many enemies.
Yeah. This suffers a lot by comparison, thinking about the level as it was in Symphony of the Night.
Yes.
Which is like a very, the boss here is great. Like, don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. The boss here is one of my favorites. But the actual level, that was a really memorable area because of its weird structure.
Yes.
You know, it felt a little bit less unique here. Mm-hmm. We got flying gargoyles, Valkyries. We got beam skeletons, replacing the much better Nova skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
The gladiator chariots. They'll kind of kick and punch from the background, which are great.
Yeah. Or no, the gladiator chariots are just a reprise of the dead warriors. We just have these statues, which will just occasionally their hand will ever long just into the foreground. Yeah.
Like a block from Double Dragon.
Yeah.
One enemy that we ran to before this, I want to make note of, that I have a problem with is the Mandragora.
Oh, the Mandragora? Mandragora.
So the way those things work is there's a skeleton in the middle of the room with a shit-eating grin, mm-hmm. and he pulls this thing out, and then it will just do 100 points of damage to you if you don't kill it in time. I think that's a fine idea. Like, you have to get to it and kill it in time. Mm-hmm. It killed me the first time and felt shitty. And I've been, I'm playing on emulator. It's no big deal. But if I had been playing on GBA, I would have been very annoyed because who knows how long it's been since I've saved, because those rooms are not particularly
common.
Awfully placed, I feel like. Or like placed super well. There's one place outside of every boss fight, which is good.
Those are more common down in the reservoir, is where the Mandragora are.
So this is big long corridors. The kind of navigation concept here, are there these conveyor belts that will kind of move through, but these corridors have good equipment in them. They're equipping us up for the finale.
Yes. Yeah. There's one of these corridors that has you play Simon. There are a bunch of, you know, enemies charging around on the ground level, and you step onto a platform that goes to these different checkpoints, and it will flash a direction that you need to press in order to stay on the platform and get to, you know, advance and get to the other side.
Yeah. 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 Pretty neat to throw a little mini game in there. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments of the game, you reach this big room, and this giant bat comes out, and you're like, oh, I have a giant bat. I fought these guys. It's Castlevania. But then a hand comes out of the background and smooshes it into blood. And then you fight a big background boss, fight Baylor the giant, who you can only see his hands and his eyes.
Yeah.
His face coming out of this.
This is real good.
It's real good.
You have to attack his face as he's reaching through these bars. He's mostly stationary, just a background boss. But you have to avoid his hands, which are doing like grabs and slaps.
Yeah. And phase two, he starts shooting lasers. Mm-hmm. His combustion lasers rapidly from his eyes.
He really needs to settle down with those, is the thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. And you can't do a whole lot during them. No. I had the Medusa soul, which lets you hover in place.
Oh, nice.
Which made that a lot easier.
Yeah.
But it does require switching off the flying armor, which should have been a thing you just hold A after you jump.
Yeah.
So that made that a lot easier. Mm-hmm. After you beat him, you get the giant bat soul, which lets you transform into a bat to fly and is one of the required souls to make you Dracula-like.
Yes. Yeah. And getting the ability to fly just means, okay, go back around. You have everything you need to get to all of the map squares. Yes. That you have not gotten to before.
Final Metroidvania ability.
Yes.
When you go to leave, we run into Jay, and Jay's like, hey, man, my memories came back. And I'm like, why do people keep talking to me in this? Like, don't you have anything you're doing? It turns out he's Julius Belmont. He's getting his memories back because of Your Dark Evil. He was one of the people who did the army versus Dracula in 1999. Uh-huh. And he's like, I'd love to kill Graham now, but I can't because I need to find the vampire killer whip. Mm-hmm. I sealed that up here because it would have an effect of weakening the castle.
Yes.
But now I can't find it, so I had to go get it.
Right. We're headed toward a conflict with him.
Yes.
We go to the last main area in the game before the, true challenge, kind of ending, the top floor. We need to use the giant bat soul to, get up, we're going to use that to clean the rest of the castle, and find that gun, which got my hopes up. And then it's really bad. Yeah. But then you go out through the inner quarters, through this, room that has a bunch of clocks to get to the top floors. And, this is very similar to the arena insofar as we are getting, mini boss enemies, plus a bunch of, just way too many, regular flying folk. You do find Satan's ring though, belong to Satan. Yeah.
Well, it's a mistranslation. This should be Dark Lord's ring, so it's Dracula's ring. Mm-hmm. But in the description, they translate it and says Satan himself once wore this ring. Phenomenal.
No Pick notes. Up your weapons and fight.
Yeah, it's like, oh, sick.
You do also find Orlox's suit,
Yes. Yeah. I like that too. It's worth talking about. We talked about finding rings and stuff. I wish rings were better in this.
Same.
They don't have utility effects. They're just stat boosts.
That's just stats. Yeah.
You have one utility slot and that can have a cloak or a ring in it, but it's just what stats do you want to boost. Mm-hmm. And the degree to which you boost them, we're in double digits is the scale we're working on, and it's single digit boost.
Yeah.
So like a lot of times it's like you pick up a cape and this cape gives you +1 defense, and you find another cape and it's +2 defense.
Yeah.
Out of 70. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna notice very much of it. The upgrades are not meaningful.
No.
In this,
I mostly just kept the luck ring on.
Yeah.
Pickups. Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of reason to change this kind of stuff. It is a weird part of there not being enough items in this, which is part of it being a scaled down Reader's Digest version of Symphony of the Night, which has its charms, but it also has its drawbacks.
Yeah.
Reach the top of the throne room here, and we fight against Graham. His first phase is just him, and he's doing Dracula moves against us. We need to attack his head to do damage. Then he's used fireballs and these large meteors that spiral around.
Yeah. Pretty simple, first phase Dracula thing, but then he turns into a big background demon. Right.
Yes.
It's a super cool design. Like you can see him, he's like a Silent Hill monster at the core of this thing and the torso, but the broader part of it, like the shoulder horns or whatever, are actually like these two lady faces facing each other. you know, above just like this open rib cage. Cool, yeah. cool design.
It's really neat with the color scheme of this because it's really bright colors and stuff. Yeah. Like this would ordinarily be like blood and brown scudge, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty colorful, big, you know, Eldric demon
thing. Yeah.
So you need to slide under his hands to avoid the grab attacks while avoiding this laser chandelier thing he has that tracks you from above. Do enough damage. He's not that hard, but that's because he's not the real ending.
No.
One of the things that's frustrating about this is you can't have your choice of souls equipped.
Nope.
For it, you have to equip the three, the giant bat, the flame demon, and the succubus to get the true ending.
Yes.
You know, which limits what you can do for this boss fight.
Both of the final bosses restrict your souls in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if you just had to have them? You didn't have to have them equipped.
Yeah.
That'd you know, neat. I still don't love that because you had to grind them, but you know, then you could have your choice of how to approach the boss.
I mean, like Flame Demon is a, you know, useful attack, and Succubus, I think, increases some of your stats, I think, at the very least.
Yeah.
I forget specifically what Succubus does. Giant Bat is useless for this fight, though.
Yeah. You're not going to turn to a bat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you don't have those, the standard ending is, you know, Graham dies and all of his captured souls flee him, you know, and Ericato shows up and says, hey, you know, the castle is weak. You need to, order it. You know, you specifically need to, order it to open a way for us, a way out for us. Right.
Yep.
And you return to the mortal realm where you are at the shrine. And Ericato says, you know, like the castle still waits for its master. And Soma says he can feel it calling out to him. You know, it's an ending, like everybody got out, but it is kind of hinting that there's a little bit more to what's going on.
Yeah, you're just punting it down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have the souls equipped, all of Graham's souls absorb into you, and you get a worse haircut and you awaken to the fact that you are Dracula. Done.
You've been playing as Dracula the whole time.
Yes, which is the twist of this. Like, what would the Castlevania be like if you played as Dracula? Turns out it wouldn't be that different from when you played as Alucard.
Yeah.
Dracula backwards. you know, it requires taking this lore more seriously than I am able to.
Yeah.
Ericato says that, you know, this is part of his plan. Now that you're Dracula, you can traverse to the chaotic realm, which only Dracula has access to, and destroy the heart of the castle, which calls out from chaos.
Yes.
So it turns out chaos did it. we go on our way to the shadow door and Julius appears and he's like, I know you're Dracula. You're like, I'm not like the other Draculas.
well, I'm a Belmont, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're destined. And you do a duel fight versus a Castlevania protagonist, which I think rocks.
It's really good.
This is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like the way it progresses is really good too. So like his standard moveset, he has a huge amount of reach because he has the vampire killer. And he's got some like jump attacks, like almost like a beat him up, like diagonal kick kind of thing. But as you do damage to him, he goes through phases where he unlocks more of the standard Castlevania, like support abilities, right? So he gets the axe, he gets the, you know, the holy water. And he also gets like the ability, to like, it's like a bigger area of effect where he summons a big energy kind of ghost, like a holy ghost kind of thing to hit you kind of deal. Yeah. It's a really, really good fight. Very fast, you know, really relies on the back dash. Anything that leans into that, if you can't tell, I enjoy in this.
There's very little verticality too. You're fighting in a hallway, like a narrow hallway. So you're kind of limited in your ability to vertically avoid stuff.
Yes.
Which works to its advantage. You down him. And he's like, hey, you've been holding back. And he's like, yeah, I realize you realize I'm still in there. You know, and then because we're in a big cliche pile up, someone's like, you know, promise me you'll kill me if I turn into a Dracula. He's like, I promise I'll kill you if you Dracula.
you Dracula girl.
if you Drac, I'm back. If you go to the chamber beyond this and enter that portal to go to the chaotic realm, this is, if people play Isaac, this is the delirium floor, where it is just individual rooms from all the previous floors put together without any connecting tissue. It's washed out, and you just go from like one palette to another.
Yeah, it's nowhere from the end of a Silent Hill game.
It's not my favorite. I don't know if I like it better or worse than the reverse castle. You know, going back to that had some issues, but like, I don't know if this is better. It just feels like busy work a little bit. to get to the final boss. Like, I would have been okay if the boss just came out.
There's not much new to it, is the thing, you know? Yeah. Like, you're mostly fighting, like, final forms of a lot of enemies you have seen before.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get to the end, and we get a psychic call from Mina who says, listen, you're not alone. Yeah. Everyone who you've met, they're all your friends, and they're going to give you power and Care Bear stare you.
Yeah, they're going to spirit bomb. Yeah.
Yes. A thing that, a cliche that should die. You know, cool at the end of Final Fantasy IV in 1992, but, like, I knew those characters, and also that was 1992.
Yeah.
You know, this is a bad cliche.
Yeah.
I did not feel like I knew Yoko real well to consider her well wishes to be meaningful.
But her last name, Gary, her last name.
Yeah. Hammer telling me, you know, hey man, I'm rooting for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're my one man economy doesn't make me feel good. I don't have affection for him.
Not at all.
And we fight Chaos.
Yes. Here. Two phases here. It's like, you know, a background boss fight and then a room boss fight is what this is. So the first phase is annoying to me. Chaos is a wheel with three statues, with, you know, and each of them is the color of one of your soul types.
Yes.
You do not have access to your souls, so you don't have your full complement of attacks. And they all do, you know, each of them has their own particular attack, mostly about like area denial kind of stuff. And they take turns. And you cannot use that color of soul until you destroy that particular statue that is like captured. Yes. That.
Yeah. Kind of a pain. I understand they want to engage with that system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I do it differently, but taking away the expressiveness, I don't think is that interesting.
Yeah.
With it. In terms of actually getting through it at this point, you've ceased to have things to spend money on.
Yeah.
So you can just buy health potions.
Yeah.
You do those in the pause menu. There's no delay or animation for them. So you have as much health as you have health banked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After you beat this phase, phase two, you have to destroy the eyes at the four corners of the screen while avoiding this skeletal dragon that's there and these gems that will stack this damage on you as you go through.
Yeah. It's tough insofar as it's difficult to avoid damage, but mostly it is just takes a long time. Is the thing.
Yeah. It's fine. You know, it's not great. You eventually beat them, and the eclipse ends and everyone thanks you for ending the nightmare. Soma says, you know, Mina, I couldn't really, what it was the fact that Hammer thought I was doing a good job. That was the reason why I was able to do this.
Yep.
Had nothing to do with me. It was just everybody believing in me. My crew of, amnesiacs that I've run into in this castle realm. I've been in for like roughly 6 hours.
Yeah. The fact that they wish me no particular harm.
it just jazzes me up. And the fact that my girlfriend, I said like, hey, would you like me if I turn into a Dracula? And and she's like, well, as long as your outside form could change, but I want your inside to stay the same. You're like, what if it doesn't? She's like, no, I don't think I like you very much. And you go, and then you go fight Dracula.
Yeah.
And that's the pathos.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking teens. Shonen teens, the teen storyline of these kids. I just enough. And Castlevania is one of our last old man series.
Yeah,
for a long
true.
Time, you'd play an old grizzled dude who didn't say anything. It was great.
No.
And now we're teens. Now we're teens who care about their girlfriends.
Don't care for it.
Yeah. Don't care about it. That's Aria of Sorrow.
Mm-hmm. Playing it nowadays, even without the exposure to, you know, 2D Souls likes, which you talked about in the generalities, it does become much more apparent how this is a diminished form of, you know, Symphony of the Night, which, you know, only affects it if you have played both.
I think.
It's
one of those things where Symphony of the Night is, and certainly was, you know, so much of a sea change that having a methadone version of it was good. You know, it was I'll take that. I'll take a worse version of this.
This
is so rare and cool. Like, I will take a rare a worse version of it, basically, as long as you want to give it to me. And then they kind of push that a little bit too far by basically annualizing it.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of Mega Man it, like they run out of stuff to do.
Yes.
You know, and that's why Order of Ecclesia is such a breath of fresh air, right?
Yes.
It's one of the reasons why we did that game before we did this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so fun. Like, this kind of treat of being on a treadmill where you get more powerful, and that's really it, has joys to it.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, but it is an empty carb.
Yeah.
As a video game, there's some like demanding, like kind of action stuff early on in the game. There are some interesting choices in terms of build and weapon choice, but that goes away. fairly quickly to kind of just become, you know, gamer degeneracy of like, you know, you can grind up all the souls and catch them all, or you can basically walk to the end because you found the good sword.
Right.
You know, and that has limited appeal.
Yeah.
It's cool, but limited appeal to me, at least in 2023.
Yeah.
I will play the rest of these that are on this collection, except perhaps Dracula X at some point. Yeah. And we will do another one of these for the show, I imagine. Just it's got to be some time.
Yeah. Doing one of these every 2 years probably feels about right.
Yeah. You know, and doing other, you know, doing Silksong when it comes out, like doing games that are inspired by this kind of thing that, you know, slap tremendous amounts of ass.
You still think Silksong's coming out?
Hey, perhaps. Perhaps, or just doing Hollow Knight again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like this, there's tremendous amounts of ass to be slapped. If you are a Nintendo or a Castlevania like fan and you haven't tried any of these games that are doing new things with the format, I would deeply encourage you to branch out.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
It doesn't have that, we beat this drum all the time. It doesn't, you don't have to owe loyalty to our franchise.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that Castlevania name on it, but Death's Gambit does all of these things better.
Yes.
You know, just full stop.
Yeah.
And it's worth being part of your gaming diet, I think.
Yeah. And you know, understand, we're not saying like, oh, Castlevania ain't shit because now we have Death's Gambit. Death's Gambit
does pays the way. Yeah, this paved the way for it.
I just like, I want people to take that charitably and say like, Death's Gambit doesn't happen without this. It's because people learn from this. Yeah.
And I just mean in terms of like bemoaning the lack of these, right?
Yes,
like you're just like, oh man, we don't get any good Igavanias. We do. They're just not marketed as such.
Yes.
You know, the genre is in its strongest place it's ever been. You know, if you are able to expand your definition just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be my thing. But good game. Good game. Yeah. Painless. Pretty fun. Good music. Yeah. Fun.
Very much so.
If you like this thing and you want to have something to say about it, write in. And you'd want to do that by the 15th of September at duckfeed.tv/contact. If you have things to say about this, the Pokemon trading card game, or Doom Eternal.
Yeah. The deadline for October's games is October the 15th. And those games are Amnesia the Bunker, Dredge, and Signalis. And you do that by going to duckfeed.tv/contact. If you have multiple responses, please write in. Or if you have thoughts about multiple games, please write in multiple responses, one about each. That just makes it possible for us to do what we need to do to prepare for those dispatches.
Yeah. If you are a non-straight, non-white, non-cis, not male creator, and you'd like us to shout out your project, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, pronunciation, and a short pitch, and we'll take a look at it and possibly shout it out. Nothing this week, but so the line is short.
Cool.
If you want to support us, head on over to Patreon. Patreon.com/duckfeedtv. That's how you get bonus episodes, including this month's premium episode on Doom Eternal and next month's premium episode on Signalis. We know you want to hear those. Our most recent one on Lisa the Painful, I think, is a really good episode. I think that's probably up there for our premium episodes in terms of like, we just did good work. I think that's a good episode. $5, and you get to hear all future and past ones.
No, I mean, as long all future ones, as long as you're a patron, you get all past ones.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. if you stick around at $5.
Yes. Yeah. And you get Bonfireside Chat, extra Abject Sufferings, Unfilmable. It's value packed.
Yeah. We try to make it. Ratings, reviews are very helpful. Telling your friends, things like that. It's great. Helps us out a whole lot. Yeah. And please join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you so much, Gwen. Gwen helps us put these episodes together, edits them, and puts them out. Yeah.
We appreciate her. Until next time, what should they watch out for, Cole?
I can't remember. Who am I?
Kay.
Kay.
We call you Kay.
Mm.
Yeah.